Hi everyone, welcome back to the Good Up Pods. Today you're joined by myself, Matthew Strachan, who's a client director here at Godel. And with me today is Jorge Garcia de Bustos, one of our pre-sales consultants. So Jorge's been hard at work looking at some applications for generative AI within the business, and he's come up with a very aptly named tool called Jorge GPT. So really going to dive into some of the details of how he's created this, and I guess some of the applications, and then finally maybe some of the wider implications of generative AI. So yeah, it should be a good chat, and I hope you enjoy it.
Okay, well, Jorge Garcia de Bustos, thank you very much for putting this time aside today. As a quick summary, we're here to discuss a very interesting project that you've been working on behalf of Godel, and I think there's some really exciting applications for it potentially. So really wanted to kind of pick your brain and get a better understanding. So I think first things first, it would be great if you can provide a bit of an overview of the products that you've built.
What I built is basically an AI-powered tool that is capable of answering questions about the contents of a document corpus, of a collection of proprietary documents that our company has. So basically the way it works is it harnesses the GPT model from OpenAI, right, which is basically is the chat engine that lies underneath ChatGPT. What I'm doing it is when a user using this tool formulates a question about the contents of these documents, I am actually letting the GPT model respond to that question. But of course, the knowledge of the GPT model stopped in kind of like the its knowledge of the world stops at 2021, which is where the training stopped, and also the knowledge of GPT does not include proprietary documentation. So it has been trained with publicly available documents. So the technique that I'm using to allow it to respond to questions using like on the basis of proprietary information is something called retrieval augmented generation, which is the idea of almost like answering the question in two stages, right? On stage one, I take the question from the user and I do a search across all the documents that we are indexing, finding the most relevant snippets, let's say five or six relevant snippets that have whose meaning is kind of similar to the question being asked, right? And I'm taking those snippets of text and I am feeding that to GPT as context in order to answer the question. So it's almost like I'm saying to GPT, you are an AI assistant that answers questions. The question from the user is this one, and please use this block of text as the context in order to respond it. And then what GPT does is analyzes that context and formulates and reworks an answer that is based on the content of those blocks of text that are there.
Okay, that makes sense.
Is that like something that so just to give you an example, if we're talking about kind of, I don't know, say for instance that we were talking about InfoSec policy, for instance, if you wanted to know basically like if you wanted to answer the question, can I open an attachment from a sender that I've never met, that question is first like we first can We basically use something called semantic search to go through all the documents to find the most relevant bits, and then GPT answers the question, shall I open this email, based on all the relevant blurbs from all the documents that we have found. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And when searching the documents, you mentioned you use semantic search there. How do you qualify?
Semantic search. Okay, so the search that a lot of people kind of understand intuitively is keyword based search. So you have documents and what you look for is for snippets of text that contain a certain keyword or a combination of keywords or little variations of keywords, right? Semantic search is another kind of machine learning technique or machine learning kind of it's a way of searching using machine learning techniques. that instead of looking for keywords, what it looks is for the most accurate matches for the meaning. So basically, what we do in semantic search is we take blocks of text and we extract the machine's encoding of the understanding of that text or the meaning of that text as a vector of numbers, right? So this is machine learning. So we feed stuff, we retrieve a vector of numbers. So for every document in our corpus of documents, we extract those vectors denoting meaning, right? And then what we do later on is we try to find the most approximate or the most accurate vector in the pre-calculated collection, right, to match the meaning of the question asked by our user. Like this probably goes really, really technical for anyone who reads. So you probably don't want to go very much more further than the basically saying that is uses retrieval augmented generation, which is a technique to enrich the GPT engine with additional information. And that mm-hmm. the way we extract that information is using basically again machine learning techniques to find the most relevant snippets in the text, but instead mm-hmm. of using keywords, we use AI to look for the blocks of text that have the right meaning, right? And that's an important thing, because this engine can actually even cross the barriers of language. So you could ask a language of in a question in English and then look in text written in any other language. And because what the machine looks is for meaning as opposed to keywords, right, it can actually find snippets that have close meaning to the question that you're asking and use those to enrich the context for GPT to answer the question.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. When you were actually building, name's Jorge GPT, when you were building Jorge GPT, what was the most challenging task?
The millions of wrong approaches and bad ideas that I had to basically discard before getting to the right one. So I tried basically using pre-existing models and kind of using machine learning technique called fine tuning, which is literally taking something that is almost like 95% trained and finalize the last 5% with my documentation. But the results took forever to get any, that training took forever, was super resource intensive, and the results were terrible.
Mm.
So I had to use kind of models that were not they were not kind of good matches or anything like that. So the difficult thing was basically finding the right approach, which required making a few initial experiments that were failures, going back to the drawing board and kind of reading a lot, actually investing in a few books and familiarizing myself with the state of the art of the technology, and then kind of redirect the experiments and start looking at stuff that a bit more carefully and trying to choose an approach that would work, and then fine tuning that approach with the help of the information that I just basically, or the education that I had just given myself. But the good thing is that once I was in the right path, progress was much, much faster. But until then, it was very, very frustrating.
Mm. So when you identified the right approach, did you know instantly that this is the right way to go, this is now going to work? Or did it still?
Yes, because even though I was like, even when I was basically taking baby steps, those baby steps were already much more promising than everything that I had done initially.
Okay. Interesting, dear. And I guess, how do you actually envision that this tool being used at Gouda?
Okay, so in the first instance, my idea is to use it as a mechanism to help people kind of ask questions pertaining to kind of, I don't know, large document collections that are almost like they're very difficult to search into, right? So an example is, for instance, our sales team would greatly benefit from being able to ask questions about our past engagements and past partnerships about technologies that we have worked with, business sectors where we have had successful engagements, types of projects that we have developed before in order to prospect kind of for future work. There is also another aspect of we have a lot of people in Godel that have relocated into places like Poland or Lithuania, where kind of bureaucracy and kind of the legalization process for immigrants and everything is complicated, and it's actually a lot of the documentation is written in the local language. So being able to ask questions or to have, I don't know, summarized view of some of the documents would be very useful. So like stuff like that. So like the idea is that it's being able to take documents that are difficult to scan into, if you want, and being able to answer questions about the content of those using the language or the tone that is more kind of convenient for the person asking the question. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, ideally, also kind of pointing back or redirecting the person asking the question to the original source document and even the snippet saying, okay, for more information, go here. So that would be the like almost like the holy grail for this. Mm-hmm. And if we can actually do that using, I don't know, something like a Teams bot or something like a Microsoft Teams bot, where pretty much everybody in the right kind of group of users or anything like that can ask these questions kind of online and getting answers without having to delve deep into the documents and everything, I think that would be a really helpful. This as a local experiment, but ultimately as something that we can repurpose and re-engineer for our kind of clients to use in real world.
Mm-hmm. And you think it could, in theory, work on any large document collection?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The importance there is the way that you index the documentation initially to facilitate those searches, because obviously GPT is very good at rewording things and to understand the meaning of things and almost like playing those back to you using plain language, but what it needs is good content or like good context there. So it's important to index the documentation well, so that in that initial kind of search, like semantic search step, a lot of valuable information is pulled out, so that we can enrich the conversation thread in GPT.
So ultimately, the success of it depends on the quality of documentation that you're feeding into it.
Very much, very much. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I guess this actually ties into maybe the next question here, which is, I guess, what is Jorge GPT in the model really, really good at? And I guess, is there any areas where you see it really struggling?
Okay. So what it's really good at is when you have well-structured, well-formed phrases and sentences and content that actually follows a almost like the conventions of language, right? The machine is very good at actually understanding that flow and finding the right meaning for that. So I'll give you even an example. Like it was great to answer questions about the policies of my kids' school. So I had like 20 documents, like PDF and Word documents, with absolutely all the terms and conditions of the school and the policies regarding kind of disciplinaries and everything. And it's really, really good at finding the right snippets of documentation and returning kind of sensible answers of those. It's really, really good at it. It struggles with documentation that is bitty, like I don't know, bullet point lists without context, that need to be broken into chunks due to the nature of the tool, but it's difficult to keep an overall context across the whole of them. You know what I mean? So if you have a very large document and you need to break it into chunks to get the meaning of those and you need to invent a way to make sure that all the chunks are almost like tagged with the this chunk of text pertains to this chunk of text pertains to this. So keeping that context is relatively complicated. So when you have documents that are not that are not written in a understandable language or don't follow it's almost like a succession of facts. The engine struggles a little bit more to find the right information.
Okay, that makes sense. And I guess if we were in a situation where the documentation being fed into the model was a little bit more bitty and there wasn't like this theme of context going through it. How would you, is there any safeguard in place to ensure the validity of what the model's outputting?
I guess the one of the important things is the, like, I have two almost like two answers for those. So the first thing is that you should never use ML, right, to substitute kind of human judgment where the cost of making mistakes is very high. Okay, so it's a great tool to give you a first approximation to everything, but you should not take the content of any or the output of anything that ML does and supervise or like a unfiltered, right? There has to be an element of human discretion to actually take the content of that and interpret it and say, does this work or not? Like, just like you would not do, unless you're an American lawyer and you want to be disbarred, you would not take the content of GPT to create an argumentation to go in front of a judge, right? So, what you would do is you would use the whatever GPT produces is a first good approximation that you can then tweak and improve and use as part of your work. Something similar happens here. So, like, if you ask a question, you need to take the answer almost like with a grain of salt, like, and just understand that it's the machine's kind of best approximation. The other important thing is that we don't want the answer, although the answer in itself is useful. One of our objectives in the further development of Jorge GPT, right, is to provide answers that actually point you back to the source documents so that you can verify that. So so if our sales team, for instance, ask a question, have we ever worked with this technology on this business sector, or have we ever solved this challenge? The important thing is not just a yes, we've done it for XYZ, but also we want to point in the direction of documents that show that, so that our kind of sales team can actually go back to those and verify that that's the case. So I'm sure that we can ensure the validity of the model's output more than what we can do is put in front some safeguards around the usage and kind of almost like have a almost like a contract with the user saying, do not think that what comes out of this is gospel, right? Don't trust it with your life and kind of check the output a little bit. And what we'll try to do is if the answers kind of are systematic misfires, we will try to tweak the process of indexing or the way that we keep the context in documents and everything. But in general, you should treat the output as relatively suspect, right? And use it as a good starting point rather than the answer that you want to use.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's like, by teaching the user of what the tool's capable
yes,
of is the
exactly.
best way of ensuring exactly. its validity.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. And I guess this probably actually ties into what we were discussing slightly earlier, but I guess if we take a step back from Jorge GPT and I guess discuss AI and machine learning and these tools but a bit more generally, I guess, where do you see these tools solving problems like really well? And I guess, where do you see the big opportunities for these tools generally?
I mean, traditionally, the answer to basically what is ML good at used to be that if you have an activity that requires kind of expert knowledge, and an expert might take almost like a fraction of a second or 2 seconds to actually make a decision, right? That used to be almost like the classical rule of thumb of where machine learning is good, but that was back in the day before kind of generative AI started to appear in the horizon. Now with the advent of all the kind of chatbots and chat engines and kind of image generation and everything, the picture is becoming much more rich in terms of what are the areas where you can have agents working. I guess that something that is going to become kind of commonplace is like, obviously, this idea of answering questions with a specialist knowledge, right? that like if like that is something that like we're going to be able to trust like ML to do like very very soon, if not like something that you can trust to do it already. So this idea of enriching the chat models with information that you retrieve on the spot that is relevant, this idea of the retrieval event generation, that's already kind of usable and is something that can be put into production without a lot of effort. All the things that like it's almost like if your job does not involve things that machines are inherently much worse to do, like much worse doing than humans, you should be worried. You know what I mean? So if your job involves doing things that are almost like very run of the mill, very very boilerplatey, the reality is that like AI is basically coming after that job, quite frankly, and the only kind of the main constraints will be basically the cost of it. If you at what point the cost of training the machine and running it and everything is going to actually be higher than the cost of basically paying the salaries of those people.
Okay.
So there are it's obviously not going to be very, very many areas where you're going to be where you're going to be really safe, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to, the impact is going to be pervasive.
And I guess are there any areas where you see AI's usefulness being?
Your job will be safe because I don't know, in the same way that faces generated with AI get into the uncanny valley, you know what I mean? We become very wary of robots or avatars that are very similar to human. We prefer the cartoony, right? I don't think that anybody's ever going to trust, I don't know, a sales agent or something like that. Like anything where that relating to a fellow human, right? Anything that involves persuasion, anything that like I don't think that those things are ever going to be in the hands of machines, right? There's also like I don't know, anything where our that does not depend so much on our cognitive capability, but depends more on our what makes kind of humans very unique. That's probably safe. Everything else is probably just got the upheaval over the next 10 to 20 years is going to be insane. So in the same way that we don't recognize the world before the internet and mobile phones and everything, we won't recognize the world like after these technologies have popularized.
Okay, so you think if like the skills required for a job are like innately like human, if you need like real human skills, like, I don't know, compassion, if you need communication, you think those skills are the ones? Are
I think that those are safer, right? Every time that you're doing, and also where things are very unique, where days are very different one day from the other, that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Knowing like if you're doing something that is repetitive and every day is exactly the same as the next one, be prepared. If however you do a job where every day is a little bit different or very different and the adaptability of machines is never going to get there, or at least not for a long, long time. That's my hunch, for what it's worth.
Okay, I guess hoping to get another hunch from you. So obviously, especially over the last couple of years, we've seen some kind of major breakthroughs that everyone in the world is aware of through kind of press of ChatGPT-3 and I guess the release of ChatGPT-4. Do you think there's going to be another kind of major breakthrough to that kind of level in AI at some point over the next 2-3 years? And if so, do you have any idea of what that breakthrough might look like?
I have no idea whether everybody talks about the kind of the next breakthrough talking about the idea of a general AI basically an AI that is capable of doing any kind of intellectual task that a human, like a not very smart human or a very smart animal, can do. I'm not sure if any of the approaches that we have right now and any of the kind of the technologies is ready to take us there. I don't know if but when it happens, it will be like an earthquake under everything that we have. Right now I have no idea where the next big thing is going to appear.
But you suspect the major thing will be general AI, but when that comes, it could be a year, it could be 10 years,
it will be longer than that, because the approaches that we have right now, although incrementally they are introducing kind of amazing changes, I'm not entirely sure that they will scale to the point of having something that is comparable to the human brain. We have modules that we have things that do aspects of what we do in a very limited fashion, but that only, I don't know, replicate our ability to understand language, replicate our ability to understand images, but we have nothing that actually kind of binds the two of them without being very kind of purpose specific.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, I guess moving on to a slightly different section, I guess it'd be interesting to hear how you think businesses can utilize some of these technologies to put themselves in a position to, I guess, potentially capitalize or at the very least kind of stay on par with their kind of competitors in this space.
I guess this has been there's been a lot of things that you could do with machine learning in the last few years that were kind of very usable and where data was like the readiness of data was one of the obstacles. I guess that what makes the I don't know the GPTs and the other world more usable is the fact that the state of your data doesn't need to be as ready. They are better at working with things that are in a bit of a rougher state. I guess that one important aspect of how would a business capitalize on the new AI techniques is that first of all is wanting to do it. So and by wanting to do it is actually embracing a little bit of a more like risk tolerant and attitude that yes, there are reputational risks and there are risks of making mistakes and everything, but kind of nothing ventured, nothing gained. So if you want to eat the AI omelette, you're going to need some you need to go into break some eggs. So the idea of setting up, I don't know, teams or collaborating with partners that have the capability and can kind of help you experiment and do joint experiments and understand that experiments sometimes the results are great, other times kind of are a bit of not so great and but out of everything you basically get learning. So the first thing is you cannot expect that this is going to be get me an AI and we'll just basically bolt it on top. It's like there's an element there of learning to work with it and embracing the kind of the more experimental mindset that comes with this technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay, makes sense. And I think final question on my side is just, I guess, where do you think or what role do you think AI will have to play in your average business 10 years from now?
There's a lot of things that there's a lot of, I don't know, company divisions, company departments, company roles that just will not be there because I guess that what we'll see is that is there'll be, if not general purpose AIs or anything like that, there might be kind of specialist AIs to help with a lot of tasks. So every time you do something kind of mind-numbing or time-consuming or repeatable or you'll be able to engage one of these things every time you do something that you haven't done before, but you might be able to ask the machine to kind of investigate for you and give you ideas of how it's going to be done. So there's a lot of like we will use them a lot, and as a result of that there's going to be like hopefully that will have it will increase kind of our productivity and our ability to get stuff done. But it's going to require a significant kind of cognitive change in the way that we work. Personally, the reason why I'm working with it, other than the fact that I find the topic fascinating, is also that I know it's coming. So for myself, building an intuition of how these things work is probably the best way of ensuring that the next 5-10 years, I'll be personally prepared to what happens. So I guess that what's going to happen in the next 10 years is that anyone who's not using AIs is almost like anyone who's not using a laptop or email to communicate. So you might be able to get away at the beginning with not using it, but once they become kind of generally available tools, anybody who's not using them will be at a significant disadvantage versus everyone else who's using them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfectly. Well, I think that wraps us up there. So thanks very much for your time.
Cool.